anyone from NIAAA on yet. Ken can't make it. We didn't hear back from Susan. So, and if we don't have someone from NIAAA, this can't be an official call. So.
Oh.
Now that Lori's retired in the private sector.
That's right. I don't count.
Just dealing with this NIAAA travel grant to the RSA meeting. What a pain.
Has that been officialized?
Yeah, it was awarded, and we sent out notice to the first group, and we are, these were for the foreign people coming.
Right, right.
That must be Charlie.
Yep, I just logged in.
Hey, Charlie.
I'm here.
The only one now is Tim.
Okay, Tim called me earlier today. He said he would try to make it. He got involved in a surgery early this morning, and it was going to go longer than he thought. So he said he'd try to call in if he could.
All right,
well, he wasn't sure.
Well, we'll just start. Jill, the meeting, I guess by now most of you know that the basic science meeting will be on the 10th, and it'll go, all day. Then on the 11th, it's going to be a joint meeting between 8:30 and 2 o'clock between the basic science and the clinical meeting, and that'll end by 2. And then that afternoon, the clinical group is going to meet as late as necessary. And then on the 12th, there's going to be a joint meeting of the CIAFSD and the PASS project. And I know some of you have been invited to attend that meeting as well. And anyone who wants to is invited to attend that meeting. I've sent out all of the abstracts to the PASS group. They're supposed to send me their abstracts and specific aims, but I haven't received them yet. So if anyone does want to stay over for the combined clinical or the CIAFSD PASS project meeting and needs to fix their hotel or anything, Jill, I'm assuming you can handle that?
I'll try my best.
All right. Well, we'll see what we can do for you. I know the hotel's pretty booked up.
I would need
to. And I think Tim and Charlie, did Ken talk to you about coming? Or?
Yeah. Well, I've gotten communication from Jill. So I pretty much plan to be there.
Okay. Kathy, I don't know whether you want to stay or not.
Probably not.
All right, so you can plan on being done by 2 o'clock on the 11th.
Wednesday. Okay.
All right. Bill Barnett has set up a wiki site and sent everybody an email about how to sign on. And so far, the only person who is logged on and made any message or Michael and myself, I just did it in one board to see if it would work. So that's now available if you guys want to have ongoing online discussions about any topic.
I might have missed it. Was the email sent it to by?
It was sent by Bill Barnett.
Oh, okay. I need to check.
Did everyone get it, or?
Yes, I did.
Yes, I saw it.
Yeah.
I just.
Okay. Charlie, I don't know if you talked to any. That must be Tim.
No, it's not.
No, it's Laura. It's Susan.
Susan, yeah.
Hi, how are you? All right, now we're official.
We're official.
Sounds like she's in a well.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was having a issues with my computer.
I hate
them. I won.
sounds like someone's having issues with their computer. All right. Charlie, you any update on the genetic and tissue bank?
Tatiana and I've got schedules now that we finally can mesh, so I expect to have something for you, I'd say April the 11th. I still haven't talked with Tim about this yet, and we have to have a conference call, which looks like is going to happen next Monday or Tuesday. No progress yet, but I think we'll have at least the basics of the recommendations and a lot of the details filled in by a week from Friday.
Charlie, I may have some suggestion for you on this tissue collection, actually down the road for using for epigenetic analysis.
For epigenetic?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's not something we have put into the mix so far. So I agree it's probably important, but it's really what we're dealing with is what tissues, what under what conditions, and those sorts of things, not really going into the various analyses yet that could be done, although we will get to that.
At the tissue potential, it can be used for that, yeah.
Right.
Okay. To update you on the dysmorphology database, that is still being cleaned, and by the end of April, it is going to be absolutely perfect, I've been assured. And Ken has started to measure both the left and right papilleal fissure to see if there are differences in that, there are laterality differences. But I have no data to share yet. He's just started doing it. They came back from the Ukraine last Saturday, and but that data is now going to be available and in the dysmorphology database. Jennifer, anything on the web pages that you need to tell us about?
No, we have, I think I mentioned last time, we have all the links for the various groups. So if you go into Principal Investigator, it's actually a separate link from the contacts, and it says group emails. You can then email a whole group. Other than that, I think we just are missing one progress report piece, and that is Keith. So otherwise, we're up to date.
Okay. If people have things that they want to put onto the public part of the web pages, please let Jennifer know or send her a copy of what you want updated or put on there. It's starting to get more hits because SAMHSA sent it out as a link in a recent update for the Center of Excellence. And they listed it as a site to find out what's going on in the area. I don't know how many of you have seen it or not, but so it's the SAMHSA Center for Excellence. They get a lot of hits from the lay public, and so if you have things that you want to get out there, please let Jill know. And that could be like any meetings or publications that you think people need to know about.
Yeah, if you have any new findings and can just write up, you know, just a real brief paragraph, then we can put that on the latest news.
Yeah.
Ed, is Tina back at this point as well?
Tina is back.
Okay.
They got back a week ago last Saturday.
Okay.
So they're fine. They had some problems with the camera in the Ukraine. They wouldn't let it into the country. So they didn't get any facial images work done. They tested out the tablet PC, and it still needs – it's not a one-person job. So they're going to be looking at that in more detail and how to try to make it more efficient and better. I'm sorry, Andy, was that you?
No,
I'm sorry. Someone started to say something? No? Hello?
No.
Okay. The only is, well, there are two other items that I have on, but they primarily pertain to the sheep. But is there
I can speak to some of that, Ed. Tim, talk to me a little bit about that.
Okay. First of all, is there anyone that we would like to invite to the June meeting that the people in the basic science group would like there? If anyone has any ideas about other people whose presence might be beneficial to the ongoing projects, just email me, and we have some money to bring people in. So,
I think if we're going to discuss biomarkers and genetic predisposition and things like that, it may well be that Cynthia Behrer may be someone we want to have there. It depends on you know, where we are, you know, and what you think after you get the report and recommendation from the subcommittee.
All right. Well, after the subcommittee comes together with a report, if you think that that's an item that we want to spend considerable time at that meeting, then we'll certainly invite Cynthia. And we should probably also make arrangements for Tatiana to be at that basic science meeting.
Right. I think she'd probably want to be there if we are going to talk about it.
Yeah, I agree.
I was thinking of maybe John Gilmore, who is doing some imaging on developing human brains. He's here at UNC. No?
Yeah, that's so. And then we'd want Elizabeth. All right, so maybe he'd be a good person to bring in on that second day of the joint meeting.
He might be. I have no idea of his availability, but...
All right, well, let me talk. I know Elizabeth is heading off to, I think, Japan or somewhere, so that might be a good thing for the 11th, because she's going to be there on the 11th. All right. Charlie, you want to update us then on what's going on in the sheep? Because I know Tim had some ultrasound.
Right. And I think he's communicated some of this to you, Ed, but if not, you'll hear it too. Tim told me this morning that in the past several weeks or past month, he's been working with really quite an expert ultrasonographer there, a veterinary ultrasonographer, to determine the feasibility of perinatal ultrasound in the sheep. And it's fairly clear, I think it's certain, in terms of Tim's view, that getting ultrasound measures in the late gestational period is not going to be feasible in the sheep. Their bone densities, at least to look at anything related to imaging brain development or something like that, anything like that, the bone densities are just too they're too dense and they can't get good images. He's trying now. I guess the next step is to look at it at a time point that is about I think he said 110 or so days gestation, which is sort of in the middle of the third trimester equivalent, to see whether the imaging under at that stage of development, the ultrasound imaging can provide reasonable images that can be used quantitatively, and he will be doing that in the next week or so to see if that works. Of course, if it's feasible at that age, it's probably feasible at somewhat earlier ages, gestational ages too, but it won't be feasible in the last part of gestation, and so that part is, I think, disappointing. But he's pretty certain that that's the case.
The one question came up was, do you know how they're doing the ultrasounds? I mean, is it stressful to the animal? Or?
He didn't elaborate on that, and I don't know. I've seen how they do it for other circumstances, and it does require, you know, restraint and positioning that could only be stressful. But I don't know whether I know that they were going to you know, see if they could do it without the positioning that they would normally do. But I don't know how he did these particular this particular round of imaging.
Did you guys manage to try to take some pictures of sheep?
Well, we're not going to be able to do that with the new camera, the non-laser camera. So because the problems with any kind of hair or blemish are just not going to work. I guess it's also even a problem in some cases with the humans. But one of the things I wanted to raise with you is the prospect of maybe returning to the using the laser camera, the older camera, and seeing if we could use that to acquire images that might be useful. I don't know where those are and whether they're still in use in the CFAS.
I thought it was just the opposite. I know that the laser camera does not, I mean, hair is a real problem for the laser camera.
Well, it's the problem is that if there's any kind of density gradient in the photographic image, it can wipe out the depth information. So in the humans, for example, if there's hair that comes down over the forehead or on the cheekbone, they can't use it. They have to be very careful.
Is that with the new camera?
Yeah, that's pretty much the case. I don't know. Maybe if Andy's on, he can speak to it, perhaps. But that's the information that I was given as well.
I'm afraid I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
Check with Tatiana about that, but I thought that I know the old camera, I mean, if you have any facial hair, it doesn't get any image depth at all.
Yeah.
But I thought the new camera, because it basically wasn't using the laser technology, but rather, putting images together, was less of an issue, that they thought that the hair was not going to be that much as big a problem, but I'll check with her about that then.
Well, Tatiana and I are meeting tomorrow, and I'll bring that up with her as well.
I haven't talked about that
with her.
Try to get out to the petting zoo and try to do
that. Yeah, but that, I mean, they're still working it out in the humans, so we aren't going to do that until they did a test run back at the, was it about 3 weeks ago? Three weeks ago, I believe it was, and I'm not sure whether they've done another one yet or not. So you may find that out in your next conference call.
Tatiana wasn't on the clinical call last time.
Yeah.
So
I'm not sure that that's going to be feasible. But you know, after when I talked with Rick Ward, he and I sort of went over various ways to get not only the direct measurements that we're doing in the sheep, which I think, I mean, that's pretty straightforward now, but to get the three-dimensional data, you know, from an image, he thought that it might be, and Elizabeth Moore was sort of in agreement with this, that it might be worth a shot to try it with the laser camera, because the kind of thing where, at least early in life, the texturing of the hair may not be quite as serious a problem because they are fairly, the hair on the face is very close, sort of close and tightly laid down on the face. So we thought it might be worth a shot if there's a laser camera that could be temporarily positioned in College Station once we learned how to use it.
All right.
But it's Rick's speculation that might be the way to go.
Kathy and Fung were going to discuss strains and diets together during the past month, and I'm wondering if there's any update on that. They were going to try to get Dan and Jim an update on strain differences or on the, I guess, sub-strains, whatever they are.
Right. We weren't able to get a lot of information from our first try, so we decided to set up a quick comparison. We have just gotten the Harlan mice in. We've never ordered them before, but we just got them, and we have the ones from Jackson Labs as well, so we're ready to start that experiment. We just haven't had a chance to start mating the mice yet, but we should have that done probably within the month.
Oh, okay. All right, good.
We're also considering perhaps reduce the pretreatment time frame.
Right. Which would maybe cut off about a week from this whole treatment paradigm, which would be good, but we haven't had a chance to test that yet. Have you looked at that yet, Fung? I don't think.
No, not yet. We were
going to wait for us
getting another group coming. I thought the person that Scott, right? Scott, there's another faculty who knows the behaviors.
Oh yeah, that does. But yeah, Clyde Hodge.
Right. Okay. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. Insight on that.
So we haven't done anything about that yet, I don't think. We're going to have a lab meeting right after this. I'll check with Scott and see if he has followed up on it.
Okay.
Okay.
The only other item that pulled over from last time is the fornix, and we didn't have data, but I have a student going through those images now, looking at the hippocampus and the fornix.
Wonderful.
So I'll let you know what we know when we find out.
Okay, fantastic.
Was that Tim by any chance getting on?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry to be late.
Oh, hi, Tim.
Hi.
You want to give us your update then on the sheep project, and particularly the ultrasound? And Charlie updated us a little bit from your conversations with him, but anything
okay,
that you want to... you know, say or...
Okay, a couple of things. One is that, we've attempted to perform ultrasonography on the fetal, on the fetus and the neonate, we've determined that it's not possible to penetrate bone at that age. There is no fontanelle. There is no open fontanelle in this species. And so in the perinatal period, late fetal period, this is not going to be possible. Our plan is to, in the next week or so, we have an animal identified to study at about 115 days gestation, which is approximately human mid-gestation equivalent in terms of brain development. And we'll see if the bone is thin enough at that point. And if it's not thin enough at that point, then it won't be possible in this species. But we will see within the next 2 weeks.
Okay. And how stressful do you think that is?
Well, it's stressful. And so we are not going to do this on animals that are enrolled in the main study in the CIFAS. These are animals that are outside of that group of animals, and it could be that practice and development that we would be able to do this in a less stressful way. But at this point, you know, it's just proof of concept. Can we in any way do this? And if not, then we'll be finished with it. If we can, then over time, perhaps we can develop a less stressful way to do it.
Okay, and I've forwarded your email to me on to Andy Hull, but I haven't heard back from him. But he does his measurements mid-gestation as well. You know, he does
okay.
them both in the second and third trimester. So.
And that was one of my questions. They go up, I think I've seen like week 28 or something like that. Is that, or do they go later even in that?
He goes, I think 33 is their...
Okay.
third trimester, and then at the end of the second trimester, that may be the 28 week.
Yeah, 26 to 28, I think, is what I...
And, you know, he finds differences there. So I just didn't hear back from him about that email, and he may be traveling. So we're all updated. Is there any other new business or any other items that need to be discussed you're going to start getting the emails that your progress reports are due June 1st.
Oh, boy. Ed, there is something I'd like to raise, and I think maybe Fung can join in on this. We had a meeting, Fung and I had a meeting with the director of the Neuroimaging Center here at Indiana. It's Andy Sakin, who came here from Dartmouth a couple of years ago. And we were telling him a fair amount about the activities of the CFAS, mostly to develop small animal imaging capabilities here. And his interest is predominantly neurodegenerative disease. He has a fairly large program with Alzheimer's disease and some other neurodegenerative diseases. But he has he expressed an interest in the fetal alcohol syndrome work that we're doing, and has protocols in place to look at in a functional MRI context, to look at probes for episodic memory in humans. And I wanted to raise the possibility of the question about whether that kind of thing might be appropriate to invite him to consider a proposal for a developmental project in the CFAS.
Now, this is in humans.
Right. Yeah. His is a human neuroimaging. I mean, he's really quite accomplished in that domain, and has looked at human memory, particularly hippocampal dependent human memory in neurodegenerative diseases. And I thought it would be of interest to talk about the prospects seeing if he could get access to cases one way or the other from fetal alcohol or FASD cases to pilot out some of these procedures in an FAS context.
Let me add to that. I think it's the strength that Andy Sagan has, that he has a program that able to analyze the dysmorphology of the brain through the MRI. Through some algorithm for example, he has a program that link hippocampal morphology changes with the with Alzheimer with the algorithm and test out particular genes correlations. He has this experience that to analyze in a greater the detail of the single brain regions. Dysmorphology correlations.
So, but are you talking there structural or functional?
Well, he does both.
Structure at this point for the MRI. I think he is also able to do functional MRI.
Right. I'm wondering if, for example, if the images that Elizabeth is collecting, or that we collect, I mean, using basically the same protocols, whether or not he could simply use those images to run through his algorithms on the hippocampus.
Yeah, I think that's the first line that I see when I talk to actually one of his informatics person, Li Xian. I went to his seminar, and that I think that's the first line, things that we can do a much greater detail understanding the shape changes in each segment of the hippocampus that may be correlated with FAS.
All right, well, let me talk to my student and see.
He definitely knows the UCLA group, so there would probably be the possibility of doing that if you wanted to pursue that.
Yeah, no, I the more data we can get, the better, and the more people we can get involved, as doing similar type things. And if basically he has a protocol to do an in-depth analysis of hippocampus and can utilize the images that are already collected.
That's right. Yeah, no need to collect more images.
It sounds like a no-brainer.
I don't think I won't guarantee it, but I would be surprised if he couldn't just take those images and do it.
Yeah. All right. So, what do you think the best way would be is to put him in touch with Elizabeth? Or
I think that's the way to go.
Elizabeth's coming down here on the 7th. So let me talk to her then, because they're going to do some images and compare the machines up at UCLA and here. So she'll be here. So let me talk to her then, and then I can get his email and have Elizabeth contact him and tell her exactly what she has.
That sounds good, Ed. The other thing I'm going to try to do is, with Tim's permission, Tim Cudd's permission, and he's hearing this for the first time, Tim has sent me some of the structural MRI from the sheep, and Andy said, well, why don't I take a look at the quality of those images and see what we can do in terms of, you know, getting three-dimensional analyses from the scans that Tim has tried down there, even if they're not, optimal for segmenting gray and white matter. There's still a lot of data that probably can come out of that, just in terms of regional volumes and things like that. He was definitely, you know, willing to work with us on that too. So I think it's a resource here that we might want to try to collaborate with.
All right. And the other thing is, I have a student who's going to be starting their dissertation and looking at what's called risk-taking behavior using this balloon task as a functional imaging task.
Mm.
And, you know, when you're doing imaging on these kids, you can do more than one task at a time. In fact, it makes a lot of sense rather than just scan them for 20 minutes and that's it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to be a two-year project, but...
Ed, do you know how much longer it will take to have the kids in the scanners to run one or two of the fMRI-related tasks?
It depends on the task. I mean, some of them are as quick as 7 minutes.
Okay.
We now have a mock scanner, so basically we train them up in the mock scanner and then put them into the machine, you know, so that we're not wasting a lot of time in scanning. In the real scanner,
mm-hmm.
So it depends upon the task.
Okay.
Which is what I'm saying. If he has a functional hippocampal episodic memory test, there's no reason why we couldn't add that protocol on.
Yeah, he didn't describe it in detail. He just said these are the things that we do now, and he did say specifically though that they were working to put the virtual water maze into the scanner. So they've already got that underway to make that part of their protocol.
All right. And in the human data, the virtual water maze, in fact, did show differences.
Yeah. I told him that. That's why he mentioned it, I think.
So I can, you know, what we would need probably is what, how long the task takes and...
Well, I think that's a discussion that you and he can have. I don't need to be involved in that. He just was, you know, he didn't know anything about the consortium, and we had started this as a discussion of small animal imaging, you know, functional and structural, and it just elaborated into the human side too. And so, I think at some point you and he and maybe Sarah and Elizabeth can discuss the various.
Well, let me ask this. Does he do any small animal imaging?
His group does. He's not. He's a human cognitive neuroscientist. But the group that he runs, and Fung knows them better than I, they have a fairly well-developed PET imaging in small animals. They do have structural imaging. The resolution is not yet the level that we want. But it is possible, yes. And I'm gonna start working with him on some of the cerebellar task stuff and do that in an imaging context.
Well, then maybe I'd like to talk with Lori, Ken, Susan, Jim, and Dan, and maybe see if in that joint meeting on the day on the 11th, we would want to have it kind of devoted to imaging and invite John Gilmore and this guy from Indiana there.
Yeah.
I was thinking it would be good to invite him.
You think that reasonable?
It seems reasonable. I mean, if he's interested, it would be good for him to see what the CFAS is doing and how he might then structure his work around that, knowing what already is being done. And,
and what's his name, Charlie?
Saikin, S-A-Y-K-I-N, I believe it is. Andy Saikin.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right, well, let me think about that and talk to Ken, Susan, and Jim and Dan, and Lori, and we'll see if we can maybe decide that that's what we want to discuss that day.
Yeah, and I don't know him all that well. I met him for the first time at this meeting, so and that makes it somewhat even more remarkable that he was, you know, he was so enthusiastic about, you know, pursuing these discussions.
Yeah, do you know what kind of scanner you have there?
What is it, Fung? Doesn't he have a, does it a 70 or 90? I don't know. It was a big one.
Yeah, I don't know.
For the animal work, right? You're
talking about. For the animal, I think they use a 3T.
Yeah, 3T in the humans. They're not going to put the...
Right, okay.
All righty. Well, he publishes a lot.
He's pretty big time. They were lucky to get him here.
Yeah, he's got 96 publications on PubMed, so...
He had been running the Dartmouth Neuroimaging Center before he came here.
All right, well, then I'll talk to them about that next week, all right? So, or I'll do it by email and get people's opinion, or maybe we could even use the wiki. So,
the advantage also is that the center over here, they're developing the small animal imagings. There's in various different aspects, so that could be a down the road a good application for us.
Yeah, and you know, Jennifer's working on some small animal imaging here. We were thinking of doing DTI in the rat. I think that they even have some brains all ready to go. So it might be a topic that's worthwhile for that day, just to discuss, you know, the possibilities for more imaging and collaborative imaging work between sites.
I especially if we can develop a strategy where, you know, you have common themes or common goals between the animal and the human.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And also common protocols among the human imaging sites.
That we already have. Pretty much everyone's using the same protocol for that. But if we get into functional imaging at more than one site, and trying to compare them, then I think we really have to be very careful about that.
Yes.
Any other comments? Anything from NIAAA?
Nope.
Science Advisory Board?
No, not right now, no.
All right, well, thank you very much, everybody. And
I think Dan deserves some congratulations, right, Dan?
Well, we've gotten some positive news about the developmental center, so... We should start funding, my guess is around early June, and at some point I might like to have the opportunity to share with you what we're trying to do and hopes that even if our center is not directly part of the CFAS, that hopefully we can do many things in parallel. We certainly have interest in getting the functional imaging started again here and moving forward and trying to link that up with the animal models as well. So maybe at the June meeting I can give you an update on where we're going with that just so you see what's out there.
All right. I'll have Jill put that on the agenda.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you very much and congratulations, Dan.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care, everybody. Have a nice April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.